Right then, welcome to Bikescape, episode number 47, and it is September 10th, 2007. Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to Bikescape. It's me, John. I'm your host. It's the Bikescape, the podcast that takes you on a ride through bike culture, coming out of San Francisco. And you can tell I'm outdoors today. San Francisco doesn't really have a summer to speak of until September rolls around, when Indian summer hits. And I'm taking advantage of it. I'm sitting downtown out at the Yerba Buena Gardens. You can hear the traffic, and maybe you might be able to hear the fountain. And a little bit of Gruva di Bicicletta in the background by Sambu Guru. And it is a Gruva today. I'm just sitting out here, and serendipitously, somebody just dropped me a sticker. It says swervecycling.com. S-W-R-V-E cycling.com. Check it out. And send him a note. Tell him how you got this, how you heard about swervecycling.com. He gave me a sticker out here in front of the Center for the Arts. Yerba Buena Gardens. Anyway, this show will not be about San Francisco for the most part. You may remember from the last show, I took the family up to Portland, Oregon for a little vacation time. Spent about 5 or 6 days up there, and it was our first bike touring trip as a family. You may also know I have a 5-year-old girl, and Lillian, and an 8-year-old boy, Theo. And this was the first time we've actually been able to go on a vacation with bicycles in the history of our family. So it was a big point, turning point in the family. We equipped the kids with trailer bikes, the Burley Piccolo bike trailer. It's like a little third wheel that hooks on. I hardly recommend the Piccolo. I'm not sure if they're making them anymore. Burley just got reorganized, but the bike trailer is really nice. It's special because it doesn't hook onto the seat post. It hooks onto a proprietary rack. And I guess what the thing is, it's got a lower center of gravity, and it also it attaches not onto something high up on the bike, but right over the back wheel, right over the axle. So I think it just makes for a much, much, much smoother ride. You don't get that wobbly feeling you get on a lot of those kind of bike attachments. And it doesn't feel like an attachment. It actually feels like a tandem bicycle. So we brought the 8-year-old and the 5-year-old. The 8-year-old, of course, Theo knows how to ride. But for long distances and for riding in traffic, we still use that thing, although it's getting a little small. Lillian's perfectly at home on it. And it inspired her to learn how to ride a bike. So the day we got back, we stuck her on a bike, and she was able to ride. So they're wonderful instruments. They're great replacement for training wheels. You may already know that I hate training wheels. They teach you how not to ride. And one thing that's really nice about these Piccolos is they actually do teach you how to ride, how to lean into the turns, and how to ride in traffic too. The kids have learned a lot about riding in bike lanes and riding within traffic, and it's been really great. Anyway, we did this great trip to a city I'd never been to before in my life, Portland. I've heard about it for years. There's a lot of bike culture up there, and it's way advanced to what I'm used to here in San Francisco. Things are really moving along there, and it's quite a community, and that's what I really seem to like about the place. And one of the many, many ways that the community manifests itself there in Portland is how you could be riding down a street and suddenly you come upon a scene like this. All right, so we're now standing in the intersection of 33rd and Yam Hill in the Hawthorne, the Sunnyside District, I guess, is what they call this area. And a couple of cyclists going by. And what's happened here is the neighbors have come together and they've drawn this huge sunflower in the middle of the intersection. It's a big stylized sunflower. And the kids are and Karen are all taking pictures. And there's a car coming across it, but they slow down when they cross it. There's something very calming about the effect of this thing. Then on the corner, there's these barrels full of fanciful bits of growth and
fake sunflower.
Yeah, fake sunflower made out of a bicycle chain ring. There's a little structure over the sidewalk, and there's a sort of a stick man climbing up the telephone pole. And there's another sort of upside down, interesting, I don't know, sort of a takeoff on the whole sunflower pattern, sort of a cupola over one of the corners. Very beautiful. And what happened was the neighborhood came together with the help of City Repair and built this little intersection. And they renamed it Sunnyside Piazza. The neighborhood is an old-style neighborhood, very leafy, trees everywhere, really green. All the houses are these old, I don't know, craftsman, Victorian-style, sort of across, kind of old houses from the turn of about 1911 or 1912 or so. They all have porches. And this is one of my little pet peeves about neighborhoods, is many places people drive into the garage and they're home. And even in my neighborhood, where not all the houses, my house doesn't even have a garage because it's old, but it still faces inward. It doesn't have a front porch that people would actually use. And people all sort of gravitate towards their backyards and into their houses, and it's all about insulation. Whereas here, these houses all have front porches, and you can see people hanging out on many of them, and everything faces the neighborhood. So there's real sense of community here, which I really like a lot.
How'd you hear about this then?
Oh, because I'm just involved in that kind of stuff. This would never happen where I live.
Right.
You know, just we could never get the neighbors to even come out of their house to talk to you about it.
Wow.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
Well, apparently there's a few different ones of these around the city, but this is probably the one that's known more. Because actually this is what's called the Sunnyside neighborhood.
Yeah, it's funny. I live in Sunnyside in San Francisco.
Oh, funny.
So it's kind of like got the sun in Sunnyside. Go figure.
Sunflowers.
Yeah.
I get it. Yeah. So. Were you part of it, putting it together?
No, we would have liked to have been had we known that it was going on.
And we weren't aware. We
actually live a few blocks away, and we could see the paint glowing from two blocks away.
We did that. We were wanting to do that. So, apparently, they do it about once a year.
In a different part of town?
No, this one. They
redo it.
This isn't a majorly busy intersection.
It does get worn down, though.
It gets worn down. And it's just regular house paint. So it doesn't stay very long. This is a full-on walking neighborhood. I mean, we could park our cars on Friday night if we wanted to not touch them until Monday.
Yeah. Well, we don't even have a car. We haven't had a car in about 10 years.
Well, so this is the
and you could do that here, actually.
Right. Yeah. Very livable. Really bikeable.
It's very bikeable.
Portland's extremely
bikeable. It's a lot more so than the Bay.
Yeah.
But even for working downtown, I work downtown, and I just get on
walk
the bus.
A block.
Walk a block. Get on the bus. And it's just a 10-minute shot, and they have to walk about maybe 6 blocks. But yeah.
So downtown is the other side of the river, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's only about from here, between 2.5 and 3 miles away.
Yeah, so really you could walk it, bike it very
easily. Yeah, we've gone across the Hawthorne Bridge about 5 times since we've been here. It's such a fun little ride.
Yeah.
It's so easy.
Well, and that's the bridge for bikers in the morning. There's usually just, I mean, even when I'm going across that bridge in my car, there's probably about 30 bikers alongside of me.
Yeah, I probably outnumber the cars, huh?
It's pretty much there.
It's amazing.
It's great.
Yes.
I love it.
Another thing that got Karen, that was my wife Karen, by the way, in that last segment. Another thing that got Karen and me and the rest of the family kind of excited about Portland bike culture was running into Todd Farner, one of the co-owners of Clever Cycles, a great bike shop, very unusual bike shop, in also in the Hawthorne district, not too far away from the piazza there, Sunnyside Piazza. We went into the shop ostensibly to get a new helmet for Lillian because she needed one, but the next thing you knew, we were taking a test ride on a Bakfiets, which is a Dutch bike, a Dutch cargo bike. If you want to see a picture of one, you can look at it on the website, bikescape.blogspot.com, and it was a wonderful ride.
Oh, okay. Hey, Daddy, are you thinking of getting it?
No, I'm not right now, but I would love to.
We actually do rent them.
Oh, do you?
Yes.
Oh,
it'd be great for
and things like that, or day trips.
Well, next time we'll come up without our bikes and we'll just rent a couple of these.
A couple of you can get by in one.
Yeah.
I'm serious. We're all family rides in one. I have four kids. We offered to display one.
Who's pedaling?
With Grant's store.
I'm heavier than
that. Oh, look at this. Look how easy it is riding two kids around. Look at that. See how fast we can. Woo! See how the front wheel turns when I turn?
Yeah. It turns really fast. Hey, look up in your car. Be careful. Daddy, turn. Turn when you have to. Turn when you have to.
Let's go one more block. One more block. Now these really lovely tree lines, everything's so leafy here.
Yeah.
It's like a big Berkeley. What do you think, Lillian?
Weird.
Is it weird?
Weird.
Just weird? Why?
Weird.
Really low to the ground, our butts are scraping the ground, it feels like. And then when Todd like turns, we go like this. Look at that. Whoa, whoa. That's pretty cool.
It's
sitting
in the middle of the long boom instead of over an axle. So it's pretty smooth.
It's funny, from down here, it seems like we're coming really close to the parked cars, but not really.
Oh, my door's on you guys?
No.
You just tear off a door, though, if you hit one of this. The battering ram kind of thing.
How would you describe this, Lillian?
Truck.
If you were in school and you had to just talk about your summer vacation?
I'd say a truck.
You'd say it's like a truck on a bike?
Yeah. A little
minivan.
With no wheels.
Yeah. Woo-hoo!
I'll put it on the stand before you. That's an easy way to.
That's big,
Finn. There
you go. No, now I'll try the yellow one.
No, I think that's it. Todd's got work today. Although this is his work, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a good part.
Must be nice. And it's got a little lock that just locks the wheel. Yeah. Self-locker.
Yep.
I've seen those around. Little Dutch things attached to the frame.
You can't ride it without the key and the lock, so it's like a car metaphor, you know? Can't be without your keys.
And I forget if we already
completely
said.
Encased. Skirt guard.
Yeah, it's got a skirt guard. It's got a rack on top.
A what guard?
It's made out of steel.
Yeah.
Daddy, what? A what guard?
A skirt guard. So you can ride with a skirt and it won't get,
or
a coat or a
leather pole or whatever you want.
Yeah, and the chain, it's got a chain guard over the front of it. But it's for steel, it's actually, let's just see if we can pick this up.
It's 80 pounds.
It's 80 pounds.
Yeah.
That's not bad.
It's really fast downhill.
And the box is made out of wood. It looks like some kind of rosewood or something.
It's marine plywood.
It's marine plywood.
Yeah. Again, an outdoor storage. It's the notion. And pump generator lighting, front rear.
So you were saying before, you these are made to be stored outdoors?
Correct. Nobody has garages in the Netherlands. There are about 15,000 of these in the Amsterdam area.
And no one ever thinks of
stealing them or what?
Not around here, huh? And you were saying there's a hub generator on the front for the light?
Yeah, and it's wired all the way to the rear, too. Basically, there's nothing about the bike that requires you to think for a moment about whether you're prepared to go for a bike
ride.
Looks
like there's another generator in the back, too.
No, that's the hub gear. it's a big fat mud that has all the gears inside.
Yeah.
So there's no dangly chain mess or, you know.
It's like, I didn't know.
And you can shift while you're moving or stationary, so you don't find that you're in too high a gear to move your load.
So you said you sold 40 of these since you opened?
Well, okay, to complicate things, we unpacked our first container in March.
Uh-huh.
And the first container sold out on word of mouth before we opened on June 1st.
Oh, my gosh.
And the second container is nearly gone now.
So business is breaking even, doing okay?
Oh, very well, yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Actually, more selling, business we can have.
Selling buck feet. So, what else do you sell? You sell Bike Fridays?
Yeah, the ticket, uh-huh. they're in each of the Quick Folder Market and the Bromptons, which are sort of the old guard of the folder market. Dutch City Bikes, a lot of extra cycles and long tail bikes of that ilk.
Uh-huh.
It's all about carrying stuff. There's, with really one exception, we don't carry any bike that isn't ready to carry at least an adult passenger. One way or another, or substantial cargo. It's all about replacing car trips.
Yeah.
So practical stuff that made to be ridden in plain clothes for the most part.
Uh-huh.
So hence the emphasis on chain guards and fenders and big mud flaps and that sort of thing.
Yeah, and you have these...
And lighting, so you don't, you know, it's just transportation, things you'd have in a car.
Right. I noticed you also have a big... what do you call that thing over the?
It's the weather cover.
You have a weather cover for the back feet.
It sometimes rains in Portland and gets a little chilly, you know. Mm. So that makes it a viable year-round family vehicle.
So you can even put a little baby in there, really, if you just just stick a bassinet in there.
Exactly, lash it down to the bottom. A lot of people do that.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I've seen pictures, and you have the usual. You mentioned Bromptons and.
Yeah. Bike Friday ticket folder. That's one hanging up there. One of the Bromptons.
The Brompton's a beautiful, what do they call it? A train station bike. Just free.
Yeah, but I've done 70-mile days on them.
Oh, really?
Guy doing PVP this year on it, Paris, Brest, Paris. They're 750 miles in 4 days. You can ride them hard. Decent little bikes.
Over the baby heads. And the nice thing about the Bromptons is they fold up really easily and quickly. And all the greasy stuff is on the inside when you're done.
Yeah, so no, you won't offend anybody on the train by getting grease on their leg or something.
So in the time we've spent talking about that, Todd has completely folded it down to a cute little package, basically. And then the Bike Friday does the same thing. It's a little bit more involved to fold down, but...
It's less involved. It's
oh, really?
Faster even. The folded package isn't quite as neat, but it's still pretty pretty slick.
Oh, this is what 16-inch wheels are again?
Yeah. ISO 349, same as the Bromptons.
So it folds down almost the same. Yeah. Has a little wet weather cover.
Or I think that's to conceal it from people who don't like bikes, so you can say it's my French horn. I mean, no French horns allowed. I'm a little less.
This comes with a little suitcase or something, though.
You can get a suitcase that's appropriate.
Oh, this is called the ticket. I've never actually seen one of these before.
So now it's ready to go.
And what?
That's.
It's now folded.
It takes 4 seconds, 3.5 seconds to fold completely.
Oh, it's got the nice handle.
And it has a little handle. But,
So what's a better ride, the Bromptons or the?
Different horses for courses. I'd say if you're used to riding road bikes, especially straight bar road bikes, uh-huh. and you really like that handling and body position and so on, that you might like the ticket more. People who like the or people who don't like the Brompton sometimes describe the handling as a little squirrely or light. Personally, I prefer the Brompton. I like the stiffness of the frame. This is a little too supple for my taste.
Mm-hmm.
I like the luggage options in the Brompton. You can carry, had 40, 50 pounds in the front carrier without problems, and this is kind of overmatched with, I'd say use a messenger bag with this before trying to put much on that rack.
And it only has one side.
Exactly. So it's unbalanced if you have stuff there.
Oh, okay.
It's basically for getting around town. That's the main idea.
Yeah.
I guess. And then you have the larger. Do you have a larger Fridays with the
no
larger wheel?
Bike Friday normally sells direct to consumer, but they're changing their model, or experimenting with changing the model with this ticket. So they've given us the distributorship of tickets for Portland.
You got extra cycles?
Yeah, lots of extra cycles. Stuff here. That's one of the West Coast's few prototypes of the Surly Big Daddy. That's eagerly awaited. It's the purpose-built long tail thing, not a conversion kit like Extra Cycle. It's better.
Extra Cycle is a kit you can buy that
Correct.
Extends the length of your any bicycle that you have.
Pretty
and
much.
Turn it into a cargo bike, basically.
Right. Right. And this is a purpose-built bike on the same form factor, uses the same accessories, but you get a purpose-built frame that's got a better strength-to-weight ratio and is a little stiffer. And
So Surly actually makes a frame now with in conjunction with Extra Cycle, I guess, and they actually it actually fits the Extra Cycle
racks.
Paraphernalia on the back, the racks and the
exactly.
seat and surfboard kind of thing.
Yeah, and we've built this one up with 24-inch wheels instead of the designed 26, so we can run super fat tires without raising the bottom bracket too much.
Uh-huh.
Handles nicely.
And you've got what's going on with the chainrings on that one?
That one is we built it up to test our Stoke Monkey electric assist product.
Oh, okay.
And Surly's been using it and likes it, so they've given us the prototype so we can make sure the Stoke Monkey works with it.
Uh-huh.
And it works like a tandem in that, but instead of a stoker rider, you have an electric motor that drives the left chain ring in tandem with your Everett.
And what's the cost on one of these? Is there one yet?
820. There isn't one yet. They're talking November, December is a release date now. Uh-huh. 820 frame and fork. So, you know, a nice build is probably going to be at least $2,000.
And that's including, that's frame and fork and then $2,000, okay. But when you're done, you got a really styling bike for carrying about maybe 100 pounds worth of...
No, more. Yeah. The standard conversion kits carry have a 200-pound rating. This, I haven't heard a formal rating, but it's got a lot more structure involved, so I wouldn't be surprised if the rating turns out to be a lot higher than 200 pounds,
huh.
Which is where you might want an electric assist if you live in a hilly area.
Yeah, like San Francisco, yeah.
Yeah.
And you got disc in the front,
yep.
Disc brakes in the front for coming down the hills in San Francisco.
A roller brake in the rear, the same as on the Bachfeeds. We're just experimenting with different drivetrains with it.
Huh. And then, just as often happens on Bikescape, those of you who've been around a while know how sometimes these interviews just end with no real ending in sight. But that's how it goes. It's podcasting, folks. That's my excuse. Anyway, if you look at the blog, bikescape.blogspot.com, there will be pictures and links to the manufacturers of all of these bikes you've seen. The Bike Friday ticket, the Bachfeets, the Brompton, the Extra Cycle, it's all there. And while you're surfing, you should also check out Todd's blog. It's called Clever Chimp. He's been running that for a while. You may have already seen it. And in the last few months, it's been rolled over. Clever Chimp is over, but it's been become a part of the Clever Cycles website. So they have a constantly changing blog on their store website. And it's well worth checking out. They, by the way, he just had a really beautiful, very sweet entry about taking his grandmother, 90-year-old grandmother, on a ride on the in the Bachfeets, and how wonderful that was. Very, very sweet. Check it out, clevercycles.com. Well, now as we approach near the half-hour mark in the podcast, it might be a good idea to go to the bathroom, turn off the machine for a while. Stand up, stretch your legs, get something to eat, maybe come back tomorrow if you like, because there's another half hour with my new friends that I met in Portland, Megan and Kevin, who invited me into their home to talk about bike culture in Portland. So we're here in Portland, and through a whole series of machinations, we ended up with, what's your name? Tell me your names.
My name is Megan Sinnott.
And I'm Ken Sutherland.
And we're sitting in Ken's living room talking about Portland bicycle scene and how it is, how it started. I'm curious how, riding down the streets here, I see thousands of bicyclists everywhere I go, in all different neighborhoods, even in the rarefied yuppie neighborhoods up the hill, and especially down here on Hawthorne and this area around the, I don't know what you call this neighborhood, but there's a lot of bicyclists everywhere, and it seems like, and over the years I've been hearing about all these various events, like there was Bike Summer, Pedalpalooza, Zoo Bomb, the bridge rides. How did bike culture get to be so big here, and how long has it been? When did it start?
Well, I've been in Portland since 2001, May of 2001, and I can't say that there wasn't any bike culture, because of course there was, but it definitely wasn't out in the open. Definitely there was Chunk 666, and they were revered.
Mm-hmm. Who's that?
They're the group that makes a bunch of freak bikes, like choppers. They weld their own bikes.
Who preferred not to be in the open, to be quite honest.
Yeah, that's true. They well, now, certainly. Now that bike culture is, like, over the top, Chunk 666 has pulled back into the underground where they used to
be. They did not respond to my request for an interview.
Exactly. Which is kind of perfect. That's just you got to know them to know what they're up to. But you know, they were pretty famous at the time, but now they've been swamped by so much more. And what happened, I'm not really entirely sure, except that we brought Bike Summer here in 2002. A group of us got together in like fall of 2001, so not long after I moved here, and we all formed a committee to bring Bike Summer, which started in San Francisco in 1999, as your viewers, listeners probably know. And
it migrated from city to city. It was San Francisco and then some other place, and then
was it
Portland?
Seattle?
Chicago. Chicago was the second year.
Chicago was the one before us, I think.
Yeah.
I thought it was
a smaller bike summer there. And then Portland, right.
Yeah. And so we were successful in doing that. We had a month long crazy festival of bike events. And when we were done with that, the group that had put that all together, we were just wowed. And well, we took like a couple weeks off and took a breather. And then we got back together and we were like, that was so much fun. We need to keep doing this. And so we formed this group Shift, which has been doing events like Breakfast on the Bridge for 5 years running now.
Shift and to Bikes, I guess, or Shift to Bicycles.
ShiftToBikes.org is our website. Mm-hmm. And every year we put on an event called Pedalpalooza, which is like Bike Summer, but it's a little bit shorter. It's 2 weeks, actually more like 17 days. And it involves a bunch of bike events, you know, mostly rides and workshops. And
like five a day or so.
Time it was like, this year it was crazy. There was probably like eight a day. Now these events are not they're often Shift members who put them on, but we throw it out to the community. Whoever wants to create an event can do it and add it. We have an online calendar that anyone can add to.
And our weekly newspaper is, they put out a calendar.
Printed.
So a printed calendar, yeah. Gorgeous colored printed calendar, and people we've never ever seen before show up at these events. You know, so you've got the daily, weekly, monthly, yearly events that happen all the time, but Pedalpalooza comes around and you get people who may be their first bike event ever.
What kind of events? So you have five different events on the 15th of the month. What kind of events would those be?
Every month? Those ones?
No, the Pedalpalooza events.
Pedalpalooza?
There's taco rides and
donut
there's
rides.
The sushi rides. There's lots of food rides. Those seem to be a common theme. There's the solstice ride, uh-huh. In which we go out and spend the entire night riding around the city, stopping at the different buttes. There's high points in Portland, a bunch of mountains and buttes, uh-huh. And we stop at those. And it always ends at watching the sunset somewhere over one of these buttes.
Staying awake all staying night awake, long. Yeah. Riding and staying awake and drinking, you know, or whatever.
We had Portland's Worst Bike Routes ride this year, where we just went crazy going through, you know, crossing railroad tracks and
freeways.
Which surprisingly received popular press.
Yeah. One of the local news stations.
In a good way, or what?
And thought
it was
we
our
were,
way.
They thought you were protesting or something?
They thought we were. Well, they thought we were trying to. And we kind of were, but we were mostly just being ridiculous. But they thought we were kind of like trying to show the city where all these biker movements needed to be made. And yeah, we were kind of doing that, and but we were mostly.
That's ridiculous. What you ended up doing, I guess, huh?
In a way, yeah. Except, you know, who's going to ride down the railroad tracks? You know, except us. What other events are there? Well, it culminates in the. There's the World Naked Bike Ride.
Kind of kicks it off.
Which sort of kicks
That's
it
the
off.
Kickoff ride?
Yeah. There's a parade.
Doesn't need really much explaining, does it?
No.
It happens just around the world. I've heard it, that it goes. We had one in San Francisco.
We had a really good female to male turnout. Like, I would say it's 40% ladies. Wouldn't you say?
Hear that, guys?
So, and we probably had, like, I don't know, 700 or something like this year, wasn't it? It was a lot. And then it ends with the Multnomah County Bike Fair, which is a day-long...
MCBF.
Day-long event. It just has events like, you know, tall bike jousting, and what else did we do this year?
Tall bike jousting. We act like we know what that means, but can you maybe explain it?
Tall bike jousting, that's where...
That's something that's uniquely Portland, isn't it?
Well, imagine like the... you know, two people on bikes with lances, like in the Middle Ages.
On tall bikes.
But they're on tall bikes.
Tall bikes, in case nobody knows, is where you take two frames, you pile them on top of each other, and you're pedaling way up.
Oh, there's way like up. You're 10 feet high. Yeah. Tall bikes, freak bikes, chunk bikes.
This is going back to Chunk 66 again. They're sort of the originators of this whole genre of bike building.
I guess.
They are a significant part of it. Yeah.
Although there's various clubs around the world now.
Right.
But,
yeah. Well, we also, our jousters, we also have, you know, mini bike jousting, unicycle jousting, and we had unicyclers jousting tall bikes. Like, it was, yeah, and the unicyclers won, I think, in that competition, yeah.
So tall bike jousting, you get somebody up on a bike.
Sure, yeah.
And somebody gives them a push, and then they have a big long lance type thing with a cushion at the end of it, of course. But
yeah, usually a stuffed animal.
Used to be a stuffed animal, yeah. Now yeah. It's duct tape and, I don't know,
a rag.
Sweater or something.
And people get happily bloody.
Yeah, and so they hit each other with these blunt lances, and the first one that falls loses.
Okay. Yeah. I've got a good link, if you check the website, blog, bikescape.blogspot.com, and you'll see a link to a good tall bike joust. I'll put it up there. Okay.
So that's sort of the end. Yeah.
There's bike dancing that goes on.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Choreographed bike dancing. There's Sprockets, our local all-female bike dance group, dance with mini bikes. And then we had...
This year we had Pink Love.
Three other bike dancing groups came to Portland.
Oh, yeah. We had the Breaks from... These are all from Vancouver.
The BC Clets.
Mm-hmm. The BC Clets, yeah,
the Breaks, and the...
Bella Vixens.
And the Bella Vixens. Yes.
Correct, yeah. Mm. So, four bike dance groups.
The Arts.
and
bands.
And then, yeah, this year, MCBF was the finale of the Pink event.
Yeah, so we had this group from Austin, Texas came through, and they spent the entire 2 weeks of Pedalpalooza setting up a project. They got a space downtown, big space, and the idea was you were to come down and write a love note to someone, and they would put it in a little bottle, and then they would dress up volunteers from the community would volunteer to dress up in pink and courier by bicycle these love notes to the person to the receiving end. And I don't know.
They came all the way from Austin to do that here because it was Pelopalooza?
Yeah.
So you attract a lot of people from out of town for these things?
Yeah. They'd done the project in Austin, and they'd heard about Pelopalooza, and they wanted to do it here. So yeah, people come from certainly up and down the West Coast to come to Pedalpalooza.
So this all started with Bike Summer in 2002, and that sort of had a gelling effect, I guess. Is that
yeah? Well, I think what so not only did Shift form out of that, but really Zubom formed out of that. Like, it was that. Well, I mean, it was that. No, they'll tell you this too. I mean, it was that energy that because it happened right about the same time in 2000. At the end of 2002 is when Zubom started.
Okay, you have to stop and tell the listeners what Zubom is. It's a simple concept, really.
A group of friends started out originally, supposedly, getting together at a local pizza shop and watching The Simpsons, hanging out, and then had this desire to take the Max to the top of the hill.
Which the Max is the subway that, or the streetcar that takes you up to the top.
Light rail, right?
Yeah.
Light rail, yeah.
Like, take the light rail to the top of one of the, you know, biggest...
The West Hills.
To the West Hills in Portland, which is where the zoo is, and then get out and stop there and get on their little mini bikes. So
mini bikes, like kids' bikes. Yeah.
You know, Glitter Girl or whatever, little pink and white Glitter Girl bikes.
But they're tricked out too. I mean, sure. At first, yeah, maybe they got a kid's bike and rode it, but
modified.
But yeah, modifications started coming all over the place.
And this is a twisty, curvy road with no stop signs. Yeah. Or lights.
Often no lights.
This is late at night. What time? Like 11 o'clock? Midnight.
Well, starting at
10.
And then, yeah. And you first just run, you bomb 10. Down the hill from the zoo. That's correct. Why the zoo bomb, hence the name.
Yeah. And it's about...
I just did that today. I don't know if the recording came out with the kids. And we hit the brakes all the way down, but I don't think they do that at nighttime.
No brakes.
Oh, they use a coaster brake, so they burn through them. But yeah, they try to avoid the brake. Some of them, it's like it takes all kinds.
It's a simple concept, but it's like a religion to some people. Mm-hmm. Isn't it?
Sure.
Is that the
case?
Well,
it started out as a group of friends doing it, and then, you know, as it continued, more and more people started to notice. And what would you say was one of the big things that really got media attention was the library. They had a pile of bikes in front of the pizza joint where they used to meet. Mm-hmm. And they called it the library. It was where people could kind of go and, you know, quote unquote, check out bikes, whatever. They'd loan bikes to people. So anybody could show up to this pile of bikes. They'd unchain the bikes, and then strangers could grab a bike, join everybody, take the Max to the top of the hill, and ride down, and at the end of the night, lock back up the bikes and wait for next Sunday. So this pile of bikes got larger and larger and larger as a group of friends realized that there was more and more of an interest. So they'd go to a local Goodwill of sorts and collect bikes and fix them up, trick them out a little bit, you know, put a little love into them, but not too much because these bikes are being loaned out, you know. Pile got bigger and bigger, and it was almost an art piece right smack in downtown Portland.
And nobody came and, like, bulldozed it away or anything?
Well, no. People got a little frustrated, close. You know. Obstructing the sidewalk, and then the police took notice, and then it kind of got to be this big ordeal, and they got a lot of media, a lot of press, and I think, pretty quickly they embraced it and kind of had fun with it.
Well, you're missing the whole incident in which the officer, was he off duty? I think he was off duty, and he clipped the bikes... And stole them.
You're kidding.
Did he get arrested for this? Or was that a fake? Then it was a fake, I think.
My understanding is that somebody was joshing with everybody and said that they clipped the bikes and tossed them into the river. But I have no idea. This is all.
Yeah. Anyway.
So the bikes are gone now.
No. They're back. In fact, the city is now working on a art rack project that will be...
I didn't know that. That
will be a place for them to actually store their bikes. So they're not in this one. They'll be close to the same spot, but they'll be sort of quote unquote out of the way, more or less. But the city is building an art rack for them to attach these bikes.
That's very cool.
So yeah, there's a whole committee.
And I noticed I was reading Bike Portland, the local bicycle news website, that they're negotiating with the police. The people from Zubom, I don't know who they are, who have self-appointed representatives of Zubom or sat down with some police officers, and they're having some kind of negotiations about whether they should hand out safety flyers before the riot or whether they're trying to keep the police out of the beginning of the riot.
Sure, always a new issue. I mean, it used to be that residents up in the area were frustrated of the noise or the danger of these you know, hooligans riding their bikes, you know, drinking at the top of the hill and doing who knows what, dealing drugs around, and they made up some sort of bullshit.
Oh, there was one accusation.
That's where the rich people are, right?
A number of wealthier residents of Portland are on the top of the hill, right? Always top of hills.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but so. Ursula Le Guin lives there.
I didn't know that.
But yeah, there was actually a paper a number three or four years ago that the local paper of the Northwest claimed that they were setting park benches on fire and doing muggings in the park.
Okay.
All this ridiculous hearsay.
And we're not saying that Zubam is 100%, you know, angels. Yeah, right. Yeah. But they weren't
setting park benches on fire.
It's probably better just to leave them alone than to give them too much notice. Right.
And they've actually always kind of taken an effort to make sure that the park's clean afterwards. I mean, the last thing they want is to lose their grounds, you know, their starting point.
So the cops were recently, the whole, they started doing sting operations just recently. And that's
after the noise violations, and then after the, you know, supposedly riders were going up without paying fare. So then they targeted people not paying.
Oh, you're supposed to pay fare? I didn't pay fare today.
Ooh. Okay. that? Well, sure, after a certain amount.
Well, we had the kids, and then we had to hang them. We heard you had to hang the bikes up or you're getting in big trouble.
Yeah, I love
it. So we hung up the bikes. That wasn't easy.
What's important.
Well, you've just seen how easy it is to not pay a fare on the max. Don't, but pay your fare!
But anyway, so then there was those issues, and so now...
So now then they, like, decided the only thing they could stop them with was, like, there's one stop sign at the top on this one run. Oh, they were going down this one run they call Hellway, which is Highway 26. Uh-huh. And that's usually second run. They go up and do that one. And people have been complaining that it was too dangerous, that they were getting into traffic, you know, and they were going to be run over, blah, blah, blah. So the cops decided they didn't like it. So they claimed they were just out on a regular, like, speeding operation on Highway 26, yet somehow they were at the top of the hill filming the Zoo Bombers going through this stop sign at this parking lot.
A pedestrian
stop sign, essentially. It's only for, like, people crossing, you know, kids crossing at the museum that's up there.
There must have been something illegal they must have been doing.
Well, there was a...
They were running stop signs.
They ran the stop sign in an empty parking lot at you know, at midnight.
After hours,
with not a car in sight, okay? So, you know.
Whatever.
So that's Zubam, one of the many, many little things that happen around here.
Yeah.
Another thing I noticed was city repair. I was riding down the street the other day. And wish it happened, but all of a sudden, intersections all painted with a big sunflower in the Sunnyside District, right around the school, around the corner from the Sunnyside School, where everything's planted with sunflowers everywhere. And there's this beautiful sunflower street mural in the middle of the intersection, and all this great sculpture on the sides. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, I was involved in city repair for a while, and I guess I'm still friends with some of them. But it was started by Mark Lakeman and a couple other people back, a few years before I got here. And he's an architect and a community space activist in a way. He gives an amazing lecture on the usage of community space, comparing the stilted grid structure of the United States roads with, like, Italian piazzas.
Uh-huh.
You know, where the roads are angular and curvy, and they form all these great, you know, spaces in between. Whereas we just have, you know, intersections. Which
right. And this is an intersection at 29th and 30 whatever and Yam Hill, but they call it a piazza.
Yeah.
Sunnyside piazza.
So they're trying to transform the grid system into more of a piazza. And so what they've done is, and that was their signature one. The one they started with was down where they lived, down in Selwood.
I couldn't find
Sherrod
that one. I went
Square.
Running around looking
it's
for that one.
It's at 9th and Sherrod.
Okay.
And there they have a bunch of structures. It's with a material called cob, which is like a sort of like an adobe, just a mixture of sand and clay and straw.
And they make these fanciful, like, benches and
street
furniture.
Yeah, a lot of benches and a lot of... you can build huts. My friend over here has a whole, like, house, like a little building made out of
enclosed bulletin boards for people to put signs up in.
Yeah, and they have a tea station where you can serve... Somebody goes out there every day and fills it with hot water, and there's a little box of tea so you can make, and there's cups all around.
There used to be a free box, too, right?
There is, yes. Yeah. There was, yeah. So they have a box of free stuff.
Just community spaces, but... Yeah.
So that's what's on the perimeter of the intersection, like where the corners would meet. The intersection itself is then painted, much like the Sunnyside Piazza that you saw today, as a way for people... to slow, you know, when you come across that, if you're driving in your car and you were to hit that, or even if you come on a bike for that matter, as soon as you hit that colored pavement, you automatically slow down. Mm-hmm. You know, you just can't help it because it's just this visual, like, whoa, something's weird here.
And it's inviting. And my kids were running around in the middle of the street. I had to get them out of the street, which they would never do. They're urban kids. But something about that, that sunflower brought them right out into the street.
It's
well
comforting.
Done, city repair.
Yeah.
What's that?
Well done, city repair. You know, they got you.
Then. Well, the Netherlands have this whole thing about, like, put your kids in the street. It's the best traffic calming there is.
The Voner.
Who's going to run over a kid in the street?
Yeah.
Just play in the street.
But what I thought was really fascinating about it, and all of the Zoo Bomb and Bike Summer and Shift and all these things that we've been talking about, is the sense of community that you have here. I mean, you can actually go into a neighborhood and get the neighbors to decide on a pattern for their intersection, or on, you know, a new design for the intersection, and they'll all go out there and paint it together. They'll spend a whole day working together and getting to know. They already know each other. I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, City Repair has this thing called the Village Building Convergence every year, which there are so many projects now. It's up to, like, you have to apply for a project. And neighbors have to get together and decide, like you said, they make a design of their project, what they want it to be, and they apply to City Repair, and they'll get some funding, and maybe they'll get a natural builder, someone who knows how to build cob structures, or...
And they check with the government, too, whoever it is in the city that is in charge of the roads.
Yeah.
They get
a permit process with the city.
Not just somebody out there with a paint bucket.
Yeah.
Well, that's the way it started. That's the way it started at 9th and Sherritt, they went out and painted it. And
it's our street, so we're going to do what we want.
This is our street, this is our corner, we're painting it. And, of course, the city at first was like, you know, what are you doing? You can't do that. And they just kept fighting it. And eventually the city was like, all right. And now they embrace it. The city actually totally, and actually gives City River money, from what I understand.
And because of all this community, you find that we're finding that the city is actually on board with all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been noticing things on the street, just riding around, bulb outs, things that are kind of revolutionary in San Francisco, where we're trying to get pedestrian bulb outs and some of the more daring bike lanes that I've seen here that take you across the Hawthorne Bridge, and, you know, they make these funny left turns across traffic, and they go down what would normally be considered freeways in California, and they would never allow a bike lane on some of the freeways that I see here, but they're more daring with the bike lanes, with the infrastructure here. I noticed, the government has decided way back when that they were going to do that. I guess it seemed, because it looks, all the stuff that seems sort of revolutionary in San Francisco, the bulb outs and all that stuff, seems pretty well worn here. It's been here for a while.
I should add that the city has, or the state has a law that was passed actually quite a while ago, back in the 70s, I think it was, that says that if any road is improved, newly made or improved, it has to have a bike lane.
Uh-huh.
Essentially, I mean, it's not quite that black and white of a law, but it's pretty much that. So you, especially if you go out into the rural areas of Oregon, in the suburbs of Portland,
there's always
Corvallis. Hill and Gresham, and you're like, what's this bike lane
there's
doing
bike
out here?
Lanes everywhere. You ride in the Southwest. Phenomenal. There's like this street. There's like, you know,
maybe not very
no
many bikes.
On it, but right. If you're on it, if I'm on it, I'm like, I'm biking on it, and it's so awesome to have this bike lane. And they're not the kind, I'm not a huge proponent of bike lanes because they're usually dumped up right against parked cars.
Yeah.
No. And I mean, I've been doored twice.
I like the bike boulevards that you see here too.
Right.
Yeah.
That, you know, you'll see that there's a big traffic sewer. You know, like it's similar to Berkeley. It's like a very big Berkeley here, where you'll have a big traffic sewer road, like, I don't know, like Hawthorne here, and then a block over, you'll have a bike boulevard that's engineered with no traffic, with no stop signs, so you can just cruise through.
Well signed, and then they put little stencils on the streets of a little guy on a bike, or girl, and mark these fantastic veins through town that, yeah, you can tool up any road there, head all the way up, you know, deep into southeast on this fantastic little road.
And at nighttime, you just see the blinkies going in all directions.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's very empowering to be a biker on one of those streets.
I guess it was around the 70s or so that that Portland decided to have a green belt. And, outside of which you can't... It's pretty amazing when you're riding a bike from... we started downtown over by the river this morning, or yesterday morning, and we headed out past the museum, and we crossed the bridge and went up past the museum. Next thing we know, we're on this bike route that takes us out through... It's the wilderness. I'm sorry. It's not even like a park. It's the wilderness. It's beautiful out there.
So and it's only 5 minutes out of the Esplanade and then out
of what's the name of that trail?
Oh, Springwater.
Springwater. Yeah, it's beautiful, and you can see that any other city would have totally developed it. It'd be skyscrapers there, but here there's birds nesting. And it's quiet, and you can see some houses up on the hill. You know you're in the city, but it's wilderness. And
yeah, we have I think the largest park. Wild park in the nation in our borders, like Forest Park is.
What, and like 15 technically miles? The smallest as well. Fun fact of Portland.
We have a park that's 3 feet by 3 feet, or is it 18 inches by 18? It's small, but yes, yeah, so we have this urban growth boundary that was put in place, which was a way to keep the farms and wilderness close in. But yeah, I can get on my bike and be in 30 minutes. I can be almost basically in farmland.
Yeah. Or out in the woods.
Yeah, out in the woods. Yeah.
It's a beautiful town.
Well, actually what I wanted to say it's a beautiful town, and you know, I'm glad that you've come to Portland and you've seen a lot of things you've done well. But in the very near future, 2008, we have the World Car Free Network. Every year around the world, they have a conference.
Oh, is that happening here?
It's happening here next year. First time ever in North America. Yeah. So, highly encourage any of your listeners, scrap together some money, catch a train up to Portland. There's going to be fantastic events here. We have people coming from all over the world. You can send proposals in for... anything related to a world without cars, you know, however you might interpret that.
So there'll be a link also on the blog to the World Car Free Network. Keep an eye on that. Any other big things happening in the near future? That's pretty big right there.
That's huge. It doesn't get much bigger than that. Yeah.
That's pretty big. Well, Pedalpalooza will happen again next year, of course.
You know, somebody asked me a question when I was on their show, and I like it so much I thought I'd ask you guys. What's your idea of a perfect bike day in Portland? If you were to get up in the morning and say, I'm just going to ride my bike and have a perfect day.
Biking down to the Clackamas River on a hot summer day and jumping in.
Well, if your bike nerd starts out with breakfast on the bridges.
That's right.
Do something, you know, at work that involves your bike at some point. Have a pleasant bike ride home. Eat a great dinner and meet up with your friends by bike and go biking. And that's Portland for you. I mean, that is an honest to goodness day in Portland. I mean, it really does happen.
Well, I'm having agitation in my family to move up here, so we'll see. All right, well, thank you, guys.
Thank you, Jonathan.
I sure appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Je siffle la bicyclette. Je siffle toujours.
Well, thanks for sharing my vacation with me to Portland. It was a great trip. If you go, bring your bike, take the train. Amtrak has great trains. You can bring your bike on the train. It's not expensive. We brought the whole family up there from San Francisco for $400. And we spent the night on the train. You have to not mind not doing anything for 19 hours. But it's a beautiful, there are beautiful views. It's a great train ride. So Amtrak.com, check it out. That's really a nice way to get up there. And a low carbon, small carbon footprint too, getting up that way. So yeah, bring your bike, check the calendars, and by all means, go to the blog and check all the links I'm going to have to remember to put up for this trip. There is a calendar that you want to, if you want to take a trip to Portland, definitely check the bike calendar there first and see what's going on before you go up. As for what's going on here in San Francisco, I'm just going to keep it at one thing. There's a professionally made PSA, and it goes a bit like this.
Here's a cycling event you won't want to miss. The 5th annual Bike Against the Odds Tour de East Bay, with 4 challenging routes ranging from 30 miles to a full century with 10,000 feet of climbing. It's a fundraising bike ride for the Breast Cancer Fund, whose mission is to identify and eliminate the environmental causes of the disease. Their pledge-taking website makes the fundraising as simple as sending out an email to your friends and family. The event takes place on Sunday, September 16th in Oakland, California. Several of the well-stocked rest stops have panoramic views of the San Francisco Bay. And a delicious organic lunch, entertainment, raffle prizes, and a health expo await you at the finish line. To sign up or to sponsor a cyclist or a team, please go to www.breastcancerfund.org/BAO. Inspire the people in your life to question the chemicals they use in and on their bodies. Together, prevention is possible.
And I rode my yellow bike on that beach road. Never thought about where I might go.
Okay, well, thanks to the Breast Cancer Fund for that valuable information. And I really like the idea of the bicycle ride as a metaphor for dealing with the adversity of a bad ecology outside and inside your body, people who have cancer. So it's a really healing activity, and I really like it. So all power to them. All right, well, that's the end of another show. Please stay in touch. Don't be a stranger. You can read the blog, bikescape.blogspot.com. That's where all the links to everything that's been talked about ends up. It's a little Bikescape Central there on the web. You can look at past shows. The archives are full of 64 other shows that I've done. And you can leave comments, both good and bad, and maybe some links if you find something that you think is interesting that I didn't put up there. Put it in the comments. And I always encourage people to write to me directly at bikescape@sbcglobal.net. So there you go, another Bikescape. Everybody keep your heads down. Keep your eyes on the road, rubber side down, and don't forget to take the lane. Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Drivers, they don't want to share a lane. But the sidewalk's not complete. My only option is the street. I'm riding my bike to work in the rain. Oh, honking horns, the drivers all complain. Honking horns, the drivers all complain. Truck comes driving by, sprays up water by my side. I'm riding my bike to work in the rain. But down the hills I put them all to shame. Down the hills I put them all to shame. Well, I'm soaking, but I'm fine. It's kind of cold, but I don't mind. I'm riding my bike to work in the rain.